Giving you the gift that gives all year round. The truth about the dental industry. Dr. Shoup is your jolly, happy, somewhat tall guy performing best practices in biomimetic dentistry.
You'd make a great Santa, and that's not a fat joke.
He does not resort to procedures you should never need, like crowns or repeated fillings. Tell Uncle Randy what you really want for Christmas, okay? Lower dental bills and a non-pushy procedure dentist.
It's a Christmas miracle.
Reach out to us at ddsradio.com. This is the Dr. Shoup Show. Now, here's Dr. Randy Shoup.
Well, hello, everybody. It is great to have you here. Thank you very, very much. I am always honored that you choose to spend time with me. It's time well spent, I will tell you. You become smarter, better informed, a more savvy dental, medical, health, nutrition, wellness, you name it. You are going to know more about it than the average bear for sure. I'm here simply to give you the information that you need so that you can navigate the rest of your life to the best advantage you can possibly get. So this is what we do here. We start out every time in Dental School 101. And let's talk about today. You've gone to the time, the trouble, the expense of getting an implant. And you certainly, I would hope, want that implant restored tooth to look like a tooth. And I'm going to tell you exactly the steps that you and your dentist need to take so that your implant truly disappears. It becomes absolutely a new tooth for you. You don't give it a thought. You brush it, you floss it, you don't pay any attention to it, and it looks absolutely fantastic, even if the implant is right dead square in the front of your smile. And then we go to ask the expert. You know, there have been several smoking bans put into place, passed through legislatures over the years, a variety of different locations across the United States and across the world for that matter. Do they work? Are there any substantive, are there any tangible data-driven statistics that show, do these smoking bans really truly help? Or was it simply an exercise in people trying to ride the wave of popularity on some different topic? I have the data. I have the information. I will tell you if it has indeed helped or not. And you get to meet my good friend, Ann. Ann is absolutely an amazing, wonderful, gifted artist. She had a terrible accident as a young woman. They restored her two front teeth. And guess what? She went for years hating what they did, how they restored her two front teeth until she met Uncle Randy. She's going to tell you her story. She's going to tell you how happy she is at this stage of the game. But are you now a dedicated coffee drinker? Do you like your couple of cups of Joe in the morning? Is this a health hindrance to you or a health boon? I'm going to tell you right now.
Time to go under the microscope.
You just blew my mind.
Well, you and I know over the years there have been a variety of things that get published in the news, reported on national and television, on NPR, written in magazines, on the internet, whether coffee consumption, drinking a couple of cups of coffee a day, is good for your health or is a detriment, too much caffeine, all those sorts of things. So, finally, there has been a meta-analysis, and you and I have talked about meta-analyses before. There are those things where scientists sit down and there's such a massive volume of data and research that's published. Somebody sits down and puts all of this stuff together, cranks it through a computer, and they come up with the definitive answer. Here it is. Drinking 3 to 4 cups of coffee a day is not only safe for most people, it might protect you against heart disease or an early death, the reviewers in this study show. The findings, which applies to the so-called moderate coffee drinker, stems from a review of more than 200 previously done studies. The fresh analysis also linked moderate coffee drinking to a lower risk for developing prostate, endometrial, skin, and liver cancers, type 2 diabetes, liver disease, gout, gallstones, and dementia. So being a moderate coffee drinker in these 200 studies, once they did the meta-analysis and put it all together, you stand a chance of having a lower risk. You have a higher chance of being healthy when you look at those illnesses that you can get. Some of the studies in the review also showed that there was a lower risk for Parkinson's disease, depression, and Alzheimer's. This was all led from the University of Edinburgh in Scotland, and they have a tremendous research. You know, I talk to you a lot about where the data and the research comes from. Last week, we talked about the sugar industry didn't do their research here in the U.S. They went to the U.K. to do the data and the research on sugar. Come to find out, they didn't like the results they got. The British researchers are pretty darn straightforward about that. But so much is done elsewhere outside the United States, primarily because there are significantly less urgent restrictions on how you can conduct research in other parts of the world. So here's the takeaway. Here's what you need to know. The review suggested that drinking coffee in moderate amounts seemed to reduce the chances of dying from any disease compared to those who didn't drink coffee at all. So if you have somebody that doesn't drink coffee at all, and you have somebody that is a moderate coffee drinker, 2 to 3 cups a day, the coffee drinker has a better chance statistically of living a longer, happier, healthy life than the non-coffee drinker. The biggest benefit was linked to consuming 3 cups a day. Drinking more than that was not linked to any harmful effects, but it was also not associated with any substantial increase in health benefits. So you can drink 1, 2, up to 3 cups of coffee a day, and you get all of the benefits that we just talked about. If you drink more than 3 cups of coffee a day, you get no additional benefit. It kind of peaks and then you're done. So if you are a coffee drinker, no guilt. Now, don't load it up with sugar. Don't load it up with a bunch of those sweeteners, and don't load it up with a bunch of fats and oils in those, you know, in those international coffee flavoring things. Don't do that. We're talking black coffee. We're talking coffee. So if you are a coffee drinker, congratulations, you're going to outlive the rest of us. So there you have it. All right, now up next. So you've invested in an implant and you would like to have it look good. I'm going to give you those secrets that you need to know and you need to discuss with your dentist so that you absolutely positively get the sparkling, perfect home run smile that you've invested a whole bunch of money for. I'm going to tell you all about it right after this.
You're listening to the Dr. Shoup Show. Exclusive insider info, audio, and video is online now at DTSradio.com. Ever open that present that made you scream with excitement or maybe brought tears of joy?
It's 100% Italian cashmere and light as a feather.
God, I love it. It's a cashmiracle.
You wouldn't think a dentist could do that. But hey, Microscope Dentistry by Shoup is really different. Patients' lives are changing every day. Say no to repeated high dental bills. Say yes to life-changing dental and whole body health by starting a conversation with us today at ddsradio.com. And by the way, thanks for listening to the Dr. Shoup Show. Here's Dr. Randy Shoup.
Frosty the Snowman was a jolly, happy soul.
Well, it's great to have you here. Thank you very, very much. I always get kind of melancholy around the holiday season because my official, real first name is Randolph, R-A-N-D-O-L-P-H, and I had my dad and my cousins and my friends used to love saying Randolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. I really hated that. I can't tell you how much. So every Christmas, that's what I got to look out for, is that I got to anticipate them using my name in a crazy Christmas song. So there you have it. So don't worry if I'm bitter and bah humbug. No, I'm good. I like it. So it's all good. Now listen. You've gone to the time, you've gone to the trouble, you've certainly gone to the expense of having an implant placed. You've done the right thing. You haven't ground down your natural teeth in order to make a bridge. You've really done what is really state-of-the-art, cutting-edge, absolutely wonderful dentistry. I'm proud of you for doing it, but you certainly would have an expectation that that implant is going to look like, function, feel like, be a really, really good tooth replacement for you, basically for the rest of your life. There are some certain parameters. There are some certain rules that you need to follow, your dentist needs to follow in order for that to happen. Now, there's two distinct categories of how we do these things. There are front teeth, highly aesthetically driven, and there are back teeth that are also aesthetically driven. You have to make them look like teeth, but it doesn't quite reach the level of exactness and particularness that you have to use on a front tooth. Front teeth are critical. And I will tell you the steps that you need to think about when you are thinking about putting in an implant in the anterior segment, in the what we dentists call the aesthetic zone. It's the area that shows and everybody looks at. And so that's teeth numbers 4 through 13. If you're keeping track on your scorecards, it's tooth number 4. It's on the upper right-hand side all the way around to the upper left-hand side, just before the molars. That's what we call the aesthetic zone. And if you have an implant placed anywhere in that zone, it's critical that it be put in the right position, it's put in the right depth, and we're going to assume that the implant surgeon indeed put the implant in the right location. So we're going to just do that as a given. Now, unfortunately, it isn't always the case, but happily, I've worked with the same implant surgeon for years and years and years, and we've got this pretty much down to a science, but there are a number of wonderful implant placing people around town, surgeons, periodontists, some general dentists know how to do it pretty well, that can put the implant in the right place. Now, number one, in the aesthetic region, you can have the implant placed, and the very same day that the implant is placed up in there, your tooth is gone, they put the implant in, there is a technique for what's called immediate restoration. And it doesn't mean it's the finished, real, final crown that you get, but it's a really, 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 really good temporary crown that goes on top of the implant. That's so you don't walk out of the office missing a tooth, having still a hole in your face. It's called an immediate provisionalization. It's immediate restoration. I'm not a huge fan because those implants, as they are healing, are absolutely ultra, ultra sensitive to movement. If you take a brand new implant that's placed up in your head, even the slightest wiggling of that implant on a regular daily basis will kill the bone around the implant, and it will not what we call integrate. It literally will fall out, and that's not something you want to have happen. So we, at this stage of the game, the sophistication that we have, it is so much better to go with a removable, something like a flipper or what we call an Essex appliance. If you're up in the anterior aesthetic region, I'm much, much, much more of a fan of putting the implant in, not immediately putting a temporary on it. I've had to do it a few times. Nervous as a cat. I am telling you what, I just sweated bullets over these cases because you have to make absolutely positively sure there is no way on God's green earth that the patient has the ability to bite on or put any pressure on this little artificial tooth. And do you know how hard that is to put something in somebody's mouth that they can't have the ability to chew on? That's a really big job. And the other thing is you have to make the patient swear on their children that they will not do anything silly like bite into a sandwich or bite into pizza or not forget. So it's just too difficult. So if you can do that, let there be a nice removable temporary. Let the implant heal. Once the implant heals, though, then's where the really, that's where, this is separates the men from the boys, the girls from the women, okay? Because you need to train, you need to sculpt the tissue around the implant to make it look like there's a tooth coming out of it. I will tell you this. The shape of the gums around your implant has as much, if not more, to do with how natural your tooth looks than the tooth itself. Let me say that again. The shape of the gums around the implant, how the gums meet the tooth that the dentist is going to put in, is absolutely a critical factor in how good, natural, real, how well this implant crown disappears. If the gums aren't in the right place, the implant crown looks like it's 2 feet long, or it looks like it's a little stubby piece of Halloween candy corn. It's terrible. So through a series of steps, you take your implant and they make what are called provisional or temporary abutments, which is a fancy name for the implant company knows that you need to do this. So they've made a little part already that's ready to go. And then you mold, you fabricate, you sculpt, you design an artificial tooth that looks just exactly the way you want it to look. And then you let that sit on the implant. You can bite on it. You can chew on it. You let it sit and you let the gum tissue heal very handily, nicely. This takes 4 to 6 weeks to get this job done. So your dentist, when you come in and the surgeon says your implant is ready to restore, they'll take the little screw out of the top of it, and then your dentist will put a little, what we call a provisional or temporary abutment in, and then they'll fabricate, make you a tooth. Looks like a tooth, feels like a tooth, acts like a tooth, but it's only the temporary, because we want the gum tissue around your implant to heal and look like it's supposed to be there. You let that sit for about 6 weeks. You have the patient come back in, and you look at it again. Is the gum tissue too high, or is it too low? Is it too narrow? Is it too fat? And you can take the little temporary crown off. It unscrews. And you can add to it, change it. You can sand it. You can polish it. You can add more material to it. And you do not, I emphasize, you do not proceed to your finished implant crown until your temporary crown looks perfect. Dentists oftentimes don't like this temporary step because it takes artistic ability, it takes time, it takes effort, it's not easy to do, it's hard to do, and so they'll just throw any sort of a temporary on there and on your implant, and then they'll say, well, let's get the impression, and then the lab guy will make it look okay. I promise you, the lab guy is not about to start with you, make this look okay until the dentist does the work that the dentist ought to do, and that is get the tissue so it looks great around the temporary. You should never, ever, ever consent to go ahead with, give the nod to the dentist to create your finished crown. The finished crown never, I repeat, the finished crown never repairs any shortcomings of the temporary. Are you with me? The finished crown never makes what the temporary looks like better. All right? You will simply be stuck with the way the temporary looks. So if the dentist tries to tell you, oh, don't worry about that. Well, yeah, this looks a little short, but yeah, okay, well, the lab guy's going to fix that and he's going to make it be a little taller. Or no, the gums are a little, yeah, there's a little space there, but don't worry about it. When it comes back from the lab, it'll be perfect. It has never in the history of mankind come back perfect. I promise you this. And this is where you have to spend the time. This is why for me, when my patients come in and they have an implant placed in the aesthetic zone, and once my good Dr. Beagle, who always tells me when it's time to go, when he tells me, Randy, this implant is healed, it's integrated, it's ready to go, it takes me at least 4 to maybe 8 weeks to sculpt the tissue to where I know that the provisional, it looks perfect. Patients are impatient with me because they go, it looks great. What are you fussing about? Let's go. I said, nah, we're not quite there yet. Trust me. Believe me. So that when I do take the impression, I'm taking the impression of the exact right thing. My laboratory guy makes me the exact right thing. And I come back and deliver to you, the patient, the exact right thing. And you look in the mirror and you go, it's disappeared. It looks like a tooth. I don't notice it. It looks perfect. Gosh, thanks. That's because we didn't skip a bunch of steps when you were in your provisional training and sculpting and teaching the gum tissue what to do. So there is the secret tip that you have to know. And if you are thinking about, have, or in the process of any sort of implant work in the aesthetic zone, you need to take all the time it takes. You do not need to be in a rush. If some dentist says, oh, we got to hurry up and get the real one on. Baloney. Not even true. Big fat lie. Not true. You need to take all the time you need to sculpt the tissue to where it looks perfect, and only when the temporary looks perfect do you transition on to your finished crown. You've heard it here from Uncle Randy. Now, up next, all of these smoke prohibition bans, all of these restrictions on smoking in the workplace, in public areas, in restaurants, do they really work? Do they really give you any sort of a health advantage? I have the data, and I will share it with you right after this.
You're listening to the Dr. Shoup Show. Exclusive insider info, audio, and video is online now at dtsradio.com. Merry Christmas from your team at Microscope Dentistry by Shoup. We're treating patients in a way traditional dentists simply cannot match.
As a Christmas gift for you.
So, you want a new car for Christmas? How about a lump of coal? Well, we're not giving away cars, but I think you get the point. Don't settle for traditional and unneeded procedures. Experience holistic dentistry. Start at ddsradio.com. Then sit down with a doc. This is the Dr. Shoup Show. Now here's Dr. Randy Shoup.
We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you.
Well, we wish you a Merry Christmas as well. Now, you and I know, we've heard about it, we've watched it walk through various legislatures from around the, you know, state, local, national, everywhere. These smoking prohibitions, people passing legislation that says there is no smoking in restaurants, there's no smoking in the office workspace, there's no smoking in public spaces, only in designated areas and so forth. And over the years, there have been more of these people that are very health conscious and obviously anti-smoking, really, really like these. They think it's great. There are some folks that are skeptical of their efficacy, and they are skeptical of whether they really make a difference or not. And so the place to go would be that place that has the highest rate of smoking, those places that have the highest rates of illness that have instituted these smoking bans and prohibitions. And in the good old U.S. of A., you cannot find a state that is a smokier state than the state of Kentucky. So listen to this. Communities with strong, smoke-free workplace laws have lower lung cancer rates than those with no smoke-free laws, this new research reports. The new study was conducted in Kentucky, which has one of the highest lung cancer rates in the United States. I go down through Kentucky on a regular basis because I like to ride motorcycles, and you can't go in anywhere in Kentucky unless you're surrounded by people that are smoking. It's really, really, really gross. And so there's tons of people that smoke all over Kentucky. Huge tobacco production in Kentucky. The University of Kentucky researchers examined 20 years of data on new lung cancer cases among state residents age 50 and older, and they correlated that to where these people lived and where the smoking bans, smoking prohibitions were. Kentucky has one of the highest adult cigarette smoking rates and the highest rate of new lung cancer cases in the nation. The Ellen Hahn, who is the professor at the university in the College of Nursing who did the research. Previous studies have shown that strong smoke-free laws reduce the rates of heart attack, stroke, asthma, and emphysema. Smoking and exposure to secondhand smoke are the major causes of lung cancer. So what we find is from this data, they went to the smokiest place they could find, that's Kentucky, and these smoking prohibition laws actually do create a demonstrable decrease in heart attack, stroke, asthma, and of course, lung cancer. Now, here's one of the things that's kind of interesting. There are economists, anthropologists, sociologists that also follow these trends. And this is one of those things where I put two or three different pieces of data and research together. And it gives you really, really kind of an interesting, comprehensive picture. And so here's the thing. Where across the nation smoking bans have been enacted, restrictions on smoking in the office workplace, in public spaces, in restaurants, and so forth, there has been this theory that has been offered that says, well, that doesn't help anything much because simply when people leave those spaces, they smoke more. They'll smoke more in their car. They'll go home and smoke more at home to make up for the time that they're not smoking in these smoke banned areas. The Kentucky study demonstrates that that's not the case. And sociologically, here's the really, really interesting thing. The data is very clear that when smokers live in a smoke-reduced environment where they can't smoke at work, they can't smoke in a restaurant, they can't smoke in public places, you know what happens? They smoke less altogether. They tend to smoke less in their car. When they get home, they tend to smoke less. They never play catch up with the amount of cigarettes or the amount of smoking that they missed during the day. The restriction, the reduction in their smoking translates over to their personal space as well. It is a phenomenon that was not expected when they enacted all of these smoking bans. But the economics of it, the sociological part of it, the anthropological part of it all work together, and the data is very, very clear that this is what happens. Because we know that secondhand smoke is almost as lethal as firsthand or primary smoking. So if you are sitting in an automobile and you have a passenger in the seat with you and you are smoking a cigarette, that passenger is receiving about 90% the same amount of cancer-causing agents as you are. And I will tell you, it makes my blood boil when I drive down the road and I look in a car and I see somebody sitting in the front seat of the car driving, and I see children in the car, and the person that's driving or some passenger in the car is smoking, and I know what they will say. I had the window cracked and all the smoke went out the window. If you believe that, you also believe in the Loch Ness Monster, unicorns, and Bigfoot. You are an idiot. Because it doesn't happen. Those kids, those other passengers, those children are being exposed to your smoking. If you are confined in a home, if you have, and here's the sad part. We know that nicotine is an addictive drug. And what happens is you get somebody that is addicted, hooked on, addicted to cigarettes. That drive, that addiction will override any sense or reason that person has, and they will justify anything and everything in order to satisfy that addiction. So if you are a smoker and you say, well, I don't do this because, or I don't do that, and you are in a house, a closed house with people over the holidays, and you are smoking in order to satisfy your addiction, and these other people aren't smoking, you are violating them, especially if they're children. They don't have a choice. A grown-up can decide, to heck with this, I'm getting out of here. But little children can't. It is sinful for an adult human being to smoke in close proximity to a child. There is no way on earth you can justify, you can excuse, you can make amends for that much of an egregious act against the child. Can you tell me, I get agitated about when people take advantage of kids? Holy cow. But that's what you have to think about. Third-hand smoke, tertiary smoke, is almost as damaging because that's the residue left on substances and surfaces, fabrics and countertops and windows and car seats, that when you sit down on those things, even though you're not actively smoking at the moment, you get a big puff of all the bad stuff. So there you have it. Holy cow, I feel so much better. Thank you very much. Up next, you get to meet my good friend, Anne. She's an artist, an amazing human being, and as a young woman, had to have her two front teeth fixed, and she hated them for years until she found me. She's going to tell you the story right after this.
You're listening to the Dr. Shoup Show. Exclusive insider info, audio, and video is online now at dtsradio.com. Are you tired of going through the motions with your current dentist?
Bah humbug to you too.
Why do they keep telling you crowns are the only answer? Do you really need drilling? Time to receive a lifelong Christmas present from your Uncle Randy.
For me? You shouldn't have.
Find out why patients are switching to Microscope Dentistry by Shoup every month. Believe me, it's time to talk so we can bring you some more cheer. We're online at ddsradio.com. This is the Dr. Shoup Show. Now, here's Dr. Randy Shoup.
Run, run, Rudolph! Santa's gotta make it to town. Santa, make him hurry, tell him he can take the freeway down.
Thank you very, very much for being here. And this is really special for me because you get to meet a really good friend of mine. And over the years, we've become absolutely famous friends, and I love her to death. She's probably one of the most talented women that I know, and she's sitting here thinking, oh no, he's just buttering me up, but I am absolutely serious. She is a phenomenal artist, a phenomenal painter in watercolors and oil. She does everything, and she's absolutely spectacular. Anne, how are you?
I am doing very well. Had a great day. Thanks.
Well, I am glad you have had a great day. Well, as you well know, we chatted a little bit a second ago in that I want my listeners to kind of come to the understanding that, you know, they can have really special relationships with their dentist. They can have really fulfilling professional relationships. They can get the kind of treatment done that they want. And I'm happy to say, and I think you'll agree, we have a tremendous relationship together. And would you please tell them, kind of give the background, how you and I got started together, you know, maybe 1 or 2 years ago. That's all we want to say.
Oh, well, it might have been a couple of years longer than that.
Yes, it may be.
A long time ago, I had a car accident and knocked out my front teeth, and I was a relatively young person and had a restoration done, actually just a bridge put in that was moderately satisfactory. It worked okay to eat, but I was never very happy with the way it looked, and just constantly, periodically, I guess I should say, had the shell or the front cover of the bridge tooth fall off, and then I would have to, you know, call the dentist, and it wasn't you.
Thank you.
It was in another town in northern Indiana. Anyway, just had a mouthful of silver fillings and gold crowns, and so over my lifetime had met a lot of dentists, but I was really very unhappy with my smile and tried to cover it up, and I think I finally ended up breaking my bridge while I was snorkeling, and had just found you before I did that, and through, I think, one of your wonderful ads that was talking about dental restoration and your work with people who had had serious accidents and lost teeth. And actually, I don't know that you remember, but you saved me. I was in Grand Cayman, and my bridge fell apart, and I called you and said, now what? And you found a dentist for me who glued me back temporarily.
I do remember that. I do remember that.
Right. And so then we proceeded to reconstruct my teeth with permanently embedded or implanted teeth with porcelain covers, so I now look like I did before all that car accident happened. I now have white teeth and not silver and gold and bridges that come out or fall out or pop out at dinner parties or whatever.
Oh, my gosh. You're listening to the Dr. Randy Shoup Show. I am your host, Dr. Randy Shoup, and that is my good friend, Ann. Ann's describing how we first met and about how she had had, over her dental lifetime, a variety of restorations done, and because of a terrible car accident, she'd had all of her front teeth rebuilt, and that was becoming problematic, and she found me because of some of the reconstructive work that we do, and as they say, the rest is history. And what you all, my listeners, need to understand is Anne, like I said, is an incredibly talented artist in a variety of media. But her husband was a very prominent guy in the community, and Anne is I won't call her a social butterfly, but she is no stranger to high level dinner parties and all that sort of thing. And if there was a person on the planet that really would need to have a really, really high quality, good smile for all of the social events that she did, it would be Anne. And you limped along. I mean, you know, it was kind of, most people would not guess that, you know, you had difficulty maintaining that dental work until you and I got together and we kind of fixed it correctly. And how long has it been restored now? And we've virtually not touched it.
I will say, I'm quite comfortable saying it's been 15 to 17 years.
That's kind of what I was thinking. We're in that neighborhood.
Right. And just now, you know, I don't even think about it twice. And I know anyone out there with a dental problem or flaw or teeth, and I will bring up my wonderful sister who lives in another state, and she, too, had a car accident, knocked her front teeth out. I think it was kind of a family thing or whatever.
I was going to say, were you competing?
Competing, I think. she did hers first.
So. Oh, okay.
But she has really limped along all these years. It's always on your mind when you're looking at someone, they're looking at you, you think, oh my gosh, my bridge is about ready to fall out and I'm uncomfortable. So instead of thinking about what you're trying to say or what you're trying to convey to someone, and both of us have been public speakers, it's just to have a mouth that you don't even think about, teeth that you don't even think about, is just enormously comforting.
Well, yes, what you're talking about is it gives you a peace of mind, I guess is what I'm hearing you say, is that you're not completely preoccupied with, oh my gosh, am I going to have a tooth malfunction? Because you can't really engage in whatever it is you're doing if that's constantly on your mind.
Exactly. And it's not just that you're overly concerned with your appearance. It's actually sometimes more of a functional thing where you eat. You can't bite down on something that someone's given to you to enjoy that they've prepared. So it's not just that you're totally absorbed in what you look like. It's just a mechanical function that you're thinking, oh, dear, now what? What will happen?
You, at a dinner party, you can't be relaxed. At some sort of a social function where they're passing around hors d'oeuvres, you can't be relaxed. And it would that would get old fast, I bet.
It does. And, you know, Randy, I think as importantly, and although I loved your ad and came in and we had the consultation, what really sold me is I am a really bad patient. Because I have allergies and sensitivities to medicines.
Yes.
And have a lung problem and a bad sinus problem, so I can't recline as much as most dentists put you back.
Sure.
And the opening my mouth and keeping it open has to be for shorter periods of time. You made me feel like that's no problem. You didn't make me feel as if, oh, my gosh, I wish this woman would go away.
We so never wish for
I'm
you to go away.
I'm not an easy patient. It's not a treat to have me in the dental chair. But you make me feel appreciated, and you just say, it's okay. Are you all right? So people hate dentist chairs. I don't want to say they hate dentists. Because they don't, of course.
Some people do, Dan. We'll just be real honest here.
But you don't like the experience because you just feel so uncomfortable, and you just take so much time with me, and I've heard you with other patients that you listen to my problems, my special needs, my special circumstances, and you find an answer.
Well, thank you very much. I'm sitting here, and you know, if you can blush on the radio, I guess I'm doing it because I thank you very much for that. Because what you bring up is a really, really, really important point is that you have to treat people with dignity. You have to approach people with what they bring to you, and it doesn't do any good if you go to a dentist and that you're belittled or you're you know, that everybody, you know, breathes a heavy sigh and rolls their eyes and shrugs their shoulders like, oh God, not you again. That just doesn't foster any sort of a positive relationship. And so you take people with what they bring and then you work with it. And so it's an honor. It's a pleasure to have somebody who has, you know, you've got some challenges in terms of lungs and sinuses and so forth and how far we can recline the chair. That's okay. That's my job. My job is here to help you. My job is here not to make my day all that much easier. My job's here to serve you.
But that's why you're a special dentist. It really, and I would say this even if we weren't on the radio. As
well,
you know,
thank you.
I am so appreciative of that. Because I do have an extreme problem, and as you know, I have been to other specialists along the way who pounded on my teeth with a hammer and yelled at me. And so I've been through the ones that weren't so pleasant.
Sure.
You just really, really like people. And it comes across.
Well, thank you very much. Listen, I have taken up more than enough of your time, and you've been more than kind to spend a few minutes with me and my listeners, and I know that they value it, and I certainly value it hugely. So thank you very, very much. I really appreciate it. Have a great day. Enjoy the rest of what you're going to do today. And again, Ann, I can't thank you enough.
Oh, same here. Thank you.
Okay, kiddo. I'll talk to you soon. Thank you. Bye. Well, my gosh, how better to start your Saturday than having Uncle Randy do a good rant about smoking? Doesn't that just make your day? Hey, happy holidays for everybody. Well, listen, it is great to have you here. I want you to know that we are indeed ramping up all the things that we're doing next year for our kind mission trip. We are headed back. We have two new locations that have popped up on our radar that we want to start creating programs for so that we can go and treat the children there, do the girl pad program, do the backpack programs. And so we always want you to go to ddsradio.com. You can get all the information you need over to our kind website. So until you and I chat next time, be sure to brush and floss.
Keep on smiling, 'cause when you're smiling, baby, the whole world smiles.